This is New England Public Radio. I'm Jill Kaufman. It's Friday and time for The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. Joining us today, Susan Bigelow, columnist at CT News Junkie. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
Matt Safransky, editor of Western Mass Politics and Insight. Glad you can make it in.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good, very good. Yet another interesting week in the world, but we are going to stick to our own neck of the woods for now. MGM Springfield's Mike Mathis is out. He's been in the mix from just about the beginning, but after the casino posted its worst revenue numbers since opening in August 2018, MGM is sending him back to Las Vegas, and Chris Kelly will be the new chief. Matt, the State Gaming Commission praised Mathis. He leaves a legacy of getting the place open. What can Kelly do that Mathis couldn't do to increase revenue? And for Springfield, the city itself, does it even matter?
Well, it's strictly speaking, for the, as far as the city budget is concerned, no, because they're locked into what they're getting under the host community agreement. The bigger question is going to be, what are they going to do to make sure that they're still making a profit, still making money off of this, you know, in line with what they were generally hoping for? And you see some indication that they're going to start emphasizing more entertainment, more on the hospitality side of things, because it does not look like they're going to be able to really boost it up to the levels that were promised in terms of gaming revenue, at least as of right now, with so much saturation in the market.
Susan, MGM Springfield's personnel matters, and more so lower than expected revenue. Those could be things that other casinos are paying attention to, including the Connecticut Tribes, whose plan is to build a casino right over the state line. It remains stalled for now.
Oh, yeah, they're watching this like a hawk.
Oh.
Yes, this is very interesting to them. The two casinos in Connecticut, Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, they were very, very angry about the casino being located in Springfield. They do want to build a casino in East Windsor. So far, that's just an empty lot. Nothing's happening with it yet. But I think that they're also very interested that the numbers are not nearly what people thought they were going to be. I actually suspect that that means that the push to get a casino in East Windsor is going to slow down quite a bit, because it's really clear now the market is saturated. There's just not enough people gambling.
Let's go into some from gambling to banking. At the end of next week, if nothing changes, TD Bank will shut down its Mason Square branch in Springfield. That leaves the neighborhood with no physical bank, though there's going to be an ATM available. Matt, we've been reporting on this. You wrote about how some members of the city council are worried about poor and older residents, that they'll lose access to safe banking services with human beings. Mm-hmm. But is TD Bank being vilified in this whole scenario? And online bank is so established now. So what are the issues here?
I think that, you know, it depends. The issue is it's bigger than just one bank. There are a lot of areas of the city that are underbanked, for lack of a better description. Bank of America in the North End closed not too long ago. And I think that some people, some members of the council are concerned that it's like, oh, TD Bank, how dare they do this? But they're like, well, TD Bank, they go back to SIS, which used to be a bank in Springfield. That's what they bought out to be present here. And they do have a little bit more of a presence than some of those other banks. So I think some people are trying to balance the fact that this is a bigger issue. It affects a lot of neighborhoods. And this is not, for lack of a better description, the worst corporate entity in the city. So is it really fair to lump a lot of it on them?
Meaning TD Bank has been a good neighbor, has contributed to different
local
initiatives.
Local causes, yep.
Susan, so as you've been watching this, we know that Massachusetts U.S. senators are getting involved, sent a letter to the federal regulators. That was Warren and Markey. Are you hearing about any similar so-called banking deserts in Connecticut?
Banking deserts are common in cities. They're also common, unfortunately, in rural areas where there are parts of rural Connecticut and rural New England especially where there just aren't banks for miles and miles, which is a legacy of all the deregulation that happened in the 1990s and large, large banks buying out small local community banks that don't necessarily have a stake in the local community. TD Bank might be a good corporate citizen, but they are a big entity. So they don't have the roots here. They don't have the community roots. And it's good that the senators are paying attention to this, because this is an issue that really would have to be addressed on the federal level.
Okay. Let's move over to Beacon Hill. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, earlier this week, it was his state of the state. He unveiled a lofty climate goal. He said yesterday's solutions are no longer sufficient. Bold actions are needed. So
I'm committing the Commonwealth to achieving an ambitious climate goal. Net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050.
That is 30 years from now. So, Matt, the Democrats and many but not all environmental groups are on board with this. goal. This was a bit of a surprise, though, coming from Baker. But that target is a long ways off. Did the governor have anything to lose by making this announcement?
Not really. I mean, some people would argue that that's kind of sort of what the Commonwealth was aiming to go for anyway. So it's not as groundbreaking as some people may have suggested. And the other thing is that, you know, things need to happen soon. They need to happen now. We need to start, like, hitting the gas, for lack of a better description, not literally, to get our carbon out of our economy as much as possible, getting people off the roads and onto mass transit. But the urgency only just seemed to start to come from the governor.
Right. Susan, this is a separate issue, but connected, is a previously announced multi-state compact that would lead to higher gas taxes. So that's with all the governors. And Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut, they have had some big concerns. Baker is still on board. Isn't that the kind of hard decision that has to be made if any of these climate change goals are going to be hit?
Yeah, everything has to be done on a regional level. Unfortunately, we're still stuck with the fact that our air comes from west to east, and a lot of the smoke and pollution from the Rust Belt does come our way. So everything has to have a large regional approach. Right now, there is a lot of interest in most legislatures in New England for green energy, renewable energy, but multi-state compacts are still really hard to come by, especially in states like Connecticut, where there's just no appetite for any kind of tax increase.
All right, Susan, one more thing. Your most recent column in CT News Junkie focused on the Connecticut legislature. A new report from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy, a conservative think tank, came out with a list of improvements and efficiencies. One of them would switch the Connecticut legislature to full-time and pay them more than the current $28,000 a year. You like this idea. Why?
Well, this is actually not something that the Yankee Institute suggested. That's something that I thought that would have to happen if they wanted their good government reforms to take place. They wanted things like more public hearings. They wanted longer periods of time between when bills are introduced and they get voted on. They wanted to end emergency certification, which is just like you can bypass the hearing process completely. Connecticut's legislature only meets for a very short period of time. They only meet for about 6 months. They meet from January to June in odd-numbered years, the first year that they sit. And the even-numbered years like this one is even shorter. They meet from February until the beginning of May. And there's not a lot of time to get stuff done. So what happens is at the end of the session, legislators scramble to get everything done. So having a full-time legislature that is actually well-paid so that people don't have to have other jobs that might be a conflict of interest, I think that's a good thing for good government.
All right, Matt, Massachusetts already has that full-time legislature, and it doesn't always work out so well. So do you suggest the same would be a fix for Connecticut?
I'm not sure. I think that definitely there are some bigger states that have some very ridiculously part-time legislatures like Texas. I'm not sure Connecticut is big enough to necessarily mandate it. I do know that our having a full-time legislature doesn't always bring us the most productive legislature.
All right. All of this to be continued. Matt Szafranski, editor of Western Mass Politics and Insight. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Susan Bigelow, columnist at CT News Junkie. Good to read you. Glad to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jill Kaufman. You're listening to New England Public Radio.